Stargate Voyager.
Well, I am super excited to be joined by my friend, the host of the Confessionals podcast, Tony Merkel. Tony, thanks so much for joining me in this episode.
Thanks for having me, man. I think this is the first time on your show, right?
Yeah, I've been on yours and had to return the favor, but not just because it's a favor, but because you are a wealth of knowledge and you have this amazing podcast, The Confessionals. To everybody watching or listening, you got to go follow The Confessionals podcast. Tell us a little bit, for those who may be new to The Confessionals, how long you've been doing this, man?
Yeah, it's been over 7 years now, and my first episode was January 19th, 2017, and it was something that I started because I was called into it by a higher power, also known as God, and I took it very serious, and so I took on this project of doing general topic of paranormal podcast. I didn't really know exactly the direction it was going to go. I was feeling it out in the beginning, and as I continued the pursuit of the podcast, it evolved over time. It started out with me interviewing people on their experiences, cryptids, creatures of the woods, to UFOs, abductions, to hauntings. And as time has gone on, I evolved as a host, the show has evolved, and we're still in it seems like the overall direction of the show has been the pursuit of truth through people's firsthand experiences and truth and understanding. So a lot of my positions on things have evolved over the years, and they are a direct evolution from information I've gathered from the show, where you're sitting there and you're talking to people and you start hearing the same thing pop up on different episodes, and you're starting to think, well, if that's true and these people are experiencing this, what does this mean? And you start thinking about things and brainstorming, and the show kind of, I recently came to understand that it seems like the show is now, it's probably always been this, but I'm starting to see it this way, where it's like, it's not only about the guest and their experiences, but it's also my journey through this. You know, I'm the one constant on the show. You know, I have returning guests and things like that, but I'm the constant. And we're coming up on 650 episodes. And
wow.
Yeah, it's a lot. And so, I mean, in 650 episodes, the audience gets to hear the progression of me in this field, the way I conduct myself on the show, to my thought processes. People would hear me say, I used to think this, but I don't think this anymore. And I had to retract some ideas because of new information. And, sometimes people don't like that. You know, if you change your mind, they say, how dare you? How could you? It's like, well, I think that's part of being human. You're supposed to change your mind and, you know, have new opinions and thoughts. So it's been a very fun journey. I don't think it's going to be ending anytime soon. If it does, so be it. But I am here for the long haul, apparently, 7 years podcasting. And, I say this pretty seriously too, 650 episodes, and I feel like I'm quickly coming up on 1,000, because I can't really put into words how it feels the last 7 years. It's just a blink of an eye. I cannot believe how fast it's gone. So that's a little bit about me and a little about the podcast and what we got going there.
Yeah, congrats, man. 7 years and 600 plus episodes. That is a run. And again, to everybody watching or listening, go follow the Confessionals podcast. You're just always pumping out, man. Just seems like nonstop content. And it was cool to connect with you last year at the Blurry Creatures BlurryCon. And so I felt like, man, when I met you there and we hung out and we're having dinner, just really had a connection with you, man. So it's been fun getting to know you more since. And you've given me some great tips on my platform and stuff I'm doing and how to grow my YouTube channel better. And your tips are working.
Awesome.
So thank you. but it seems more and more like, man, as time goes on, the stuff I primarily focus on with ancient history and prehistory is dovetailing more and more with so many of the topics you talk about, whether it's Nephilim, whether it's Stargates, portals. I've seen you do stuff. You had a documentary on Skinwalker Ranch. Obviously, you cover a host of topics regarding UFOs, and you did a podcast recently. I saw, I think, about the 33rd parallel and its connection to ley lines, and so that got my attention. So much we can talk about here, but I wanted to start out asking you. I saw a post you guys did on your Instagram about Goliath's blade, and I think this was with you and some of your co-hosts. But man, that sounded really interesting, and so. Obviously, for people who might be new to who is Goliath, I'm talking about this the most famous giant in the Bible, right? Goliath, who was one of these Nephilim hybrids from Genesis 6:4. You could kind of break that down a little bit for us, maybe share some of your knowledge on that.
Yeah, so this was a topic that was brought to me by my buddy Joel, who will be a fantastic guest for you at one point because he does a ton of this ancient history through the biblical lens and understanding what was going on there through different lenses. I think a lot of times we pursue ancient knowledge, like, especially like as a Christian and stuff, you look at the Bible as part of that, and you have these preset notions when you look at the scripture. You have this world that we live in now, and if you don't look into the stuff that I'm looking into, that you look into, and other people that probably listen to this show, you tend to look at things in a very natural way, n quote unquote normal, and one thing that I'm kind of really becoming more and more convinced of is that we are much more supernatural beings living in a supernatural world, in a supernatural existence. And we're being, in a way, a little deceived in the idea that there's nothing spiritual about what we are unless we're sitting down in a quiet room opening up prayer to God or something. And, the Goliath's Blade episode kind of explores this alternative narrative through Joel's study of these words and what they could have meant in their original meaning. And to summarize it in my best ability, because Joel really spearheaded that episode, there's a real argument to be made that there wasn't the whole the suit of armor that was given to David that he rejected, and even David's stone and Goliath's blade, that there was more to it than just physical objects. I forget the actual description that Joel gave about the suit of armor, but it sound it, it through his study of these words and what their meanings are, because these words, these Hebrew words, often have multiple meanings. And there is an argument to be made that the suit of armor actually would transform to fit the body of David. It wasn't something that was necessarily huge, clunky, and didn't fit him, that it would have fit him, but he refused it anyways. And then there's also the stones that David picked up. Now it says David picked up five smooth stones out of the brook, but there's something that supernaturally could have happened with these stones, that the translation of the stone and the word that was used there was used, I think, one or two other places in the Bible, and it means firestone. And so there's this idea that could it have been something where when David slung this stone towards Goliath, that it actually transformed into something that it wasn't necessarily originally in David's hand. And we're talking about a whole supernatural experience here. I mean, like, just the idea that this kid took down a Goliath, took down a giant, a Nephilim giant, and there was all this army of men who didn't have the guts to do what David does. It's a very supernatural story when you start really thinking about what's going on here. The idea that my son, I mean, he's a little young, but let's just say he's 15, my 15-year-old, 13-year-old, however, a young teenager would have an ability not only physically but also in bravery over an entire army. That itself is a very supernatural thing. There was something supernaturally happening in David that allowed him to be so sure of himself. He understood where the power was coming from, literal power, and where it was coming from. And then there's even this idea of Goliath's sword that we talked about, where the way it's described as being, is it possible for David to have actually picked up that sword and cut off the head of a giant, it being that big? I mean, that's something that we talked about. Is it possible that the sword itself could have transformed? And we're talking about a very supernatural thing, and we're talking about three different things transforming. I hope I'm not over or underselling that whole episode, but it was a very fascinating episode to have, because it just kind of presents this whole supernatural element. And even later in David's life, there's and I don't have the scripture off the top of my head, but there's a point in time where David, as a man, is still warring with Goliath's family. And it talks about one of his family members, and I don't know if we've actually covered this since we started talking here, but like, just to let people know, like, Goliath is probably the most famous giant in history, and he was a Nephilim, which was a human hybrid, and his family was just that as well. And they come from this lineage of human hybrids that came from fallen angels procreating with women. That's the million foot overview. But those fallen angels did teach their offspring sorcery and things that humans weren't supposed to understand and know. And so that's where like the very foundation of all of this is coming from. So in the Bible, though, it talks about how he had come across Goliath's offspring, or not offspring, I think it was his one of his relatives. And the way it's written in the scripture, the word sword, it says that this, I'll just say, being this Nephilim hybrid, was wielding a new sword. But the commentaries will tell you that the word sword is implanted. The word sword was never actually there. And so we're now, if you take the word sword out and you look through it with a supernatural lens, you're now left to having a whole wide open door of possibilities. Okay, so if it wasn't a sword and they had to put sword in there because there was no other logical understanding of this, well, what could have actually been going on here? Because it also says that it was something new that David had never seen before, that it was new to him. And so David was a mighty warrior. He's killed Goliath. He's killed plenty of people. He's seen lots of death. He's been in up close battle. He wasn't one of the kings that kind of held back and just watched everybody do their thing and stayed alive. He was he I don't want to say it, but I'll say it, like, it's almost as if like he enjoyed it. Like, it was like, this is what I do, you know? When I have the power of God behind me, I rock it. And this is what he was fairly familiar with. And so he understood what kind of weaponry was of the day. And for it to be something new tells me that it might have been something different. And maybe it was a sword, but maybe it was a new type of sword, maybe a glowing sword or something. I don't know. Like it's just, I don't think that Marvel is original. I think that these things that we are taught to think are sci-fi and for the movies are actually based in ancient reality. I think that there's ancient technology and ancient understanding and wisdoms that we have lost over time, or have been stripped from us, and put in place a very natural worldview that removes the supernatural. And I think that's a very strategic thing. I don't think I think when humanity moves away from a supernatural worldview, it also moves away from a God worldview, a deeper understanding of who we are and where we come from. And I think in our ancient past, in our history, there was a much deeper understanding of the supernatural realm and what that could be. Now, is it true that this hybrid being had some kind of purple glowing sword running across a field? And David's like, that's new. I have no idea. But one thing I am fairly sure of is that the world that David lived in had much deeper understanding of the spiritual nature and the cost of it than what we do today. I feel like we live with blinders on, and the more it's been removed from our culture and society, the less we're able to see it. But back then, it was a very real thing. The idea of other realms and things piercing between the realms is something that wasn't taken lightly, and I think it was commonly understood, even to Jesus himself. Like when Jesus rose from the dead, it seems like he walked through walls and just appeared to the disciples. It's like, you know, oh well, he's God, so of course he can do that. Well, okay, but you know, there's a lot of instances of this other realm talk that tells me that the supernatural realm is probably a lot closer than what we expect it to be. And you know, stories like Goliath's blade is one of those instances where we try to draw that out and just get people, like, we don't care if people believe us necessarily. We're just presenting ideas and thoughts and conversation to get people to think. That's what we really kind of, I guess, want to do is, me and my friends, we want to encourage people to think about what they think they know, and is there other explanations to certain things that might lead to understanding as to why things are the way they are today. And so we do it in a fun way. And I don't know how people perceive that episode or not. I tend not to look at comment sections a whole lot. So I just put stuff out and I just run away.
Hey.
And
so I know the feeling, right? Yeah, you put it out there and you don't look, because there's always that crowd, man, that just want to hate and nitpick. At some point, you just can't block them all, right?
Yeah.
Hey, if anything, though, the Goliath's Blade episode made for some killer AI art. Like, I love that picture of this giant orc looking beast with this glowing red sword.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, man, that's not AI. I'm very talented. No, I'm just kidding. I wish. I drew it by hand in about 5 minutes. I love messing with the AI stuff, and that one I kind of went against my rule of thumb, which is, you know, I basically pick the first three images I generate, that's what I run with, and I develop it pretty quickly and move on because I don't have time to mess around with the show art. But this one, I remember I messed around with a little bit more than I wanted to, and it was mainly because every time I tried getting the scene together, it had David with a bow and arrow. I'm like, what version of the story has David with bow and arrow? And so I had to keep messing with it. And I think even the one I settled on, he had something in his hand and I had to kind of go in and remove it. So, but yeah.
Probably the most famous giant in the Bible. And there's so many really ancient theories about him recounting the story, you know, of David and Goliath, that David basically cuts off his head, right? Which a lot of people also believe that was to cut off his basically telepathic abilities, because he probably maybe not wasn't fully dead when he hit him with the rock. And so these things could communicate at frequencies we could only dream of. And so he was cutting off that frequency. But then I believe it says David dragged the head of Goliath wherever this battlefield was, all the way to Jerusalem, which is quite a distance if you look at the map. And so why would he drag this massive head all the way to Jerusalem? Ancient rabbinical, you know, texts and traditions that say he buried it at Golgotha. Golgotha is closely related in Hebrew to the word Goliath. Goliath, Golgotha, the place of the skull. And I've been to Israel. It's creepy to go up to Golgotha and see this massive rock skull staring at you, which is also supposedly the place of the crucifixion, or right near it. But the crazy part is, according to some traditions, I believe David buries the head of Goliath at Golgotha, basically the prophecy in Genesis that you will bruise his heel, he will crush your head. You know, Christ on the cross, Jesus versus Satan. Well, literally, Goliath would have represented the seed of the serpent, right? So now Christ is on the cross. crushing the head literally of in 3D, right? Of the seed of the serpent, of Satan. Pretty wild. I got to go down a deeper rabbit trail on that. But again, in a lot of the research I do, it's crazy whether you're in Peru, whether you're in Egypt, the symbolism of Stargates and just the legends of Stargates is embedded everywhere. In Egypt, Saba is the word for Stargate, and you literally find it and see it embedded in almost every ancient temple. And then you go to Peru, and I think I shared on one of your shows I was on this megalithic cave that had the portal in it, that according to Inca legend was a portal. And so from the Inca to the Egyptians, you got Stargates everywhere. Ancient history is just chock full of this. So Jacob's ladder in Genesis 28, this Bible story of Jacob in the desert somewhere, and he basically sees the heavens open up and there's angels ascending and descending this massive staircase. Is the account of Jacob's ladder in Genesis 28 describing an ancient Stargate?
So yeah, I do. In fact, Jacob's ladder is the first one I think of when, somebody starts bringing this stuff up, because literally within the text, I actually had a feeling we were going to go in this direction, so I pulled it up here, and I enjoy just reading through this stuff, but I'm not gonna because it's not, I'm not in a college course and I'm not teaching as a professor, but. Literally within the text, it says in verse 16 of 28, it says, or chapter 28 of Genesis, it says, when Jacob awoke from his sleep, he thought, surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it. He was afraid and said, how awesome is this? So in his fear, he's saying, how awesomely fearful is this? it brings you the trembling, but it's like amazing. And I can relate to that so much when you have these moments of life where it's terrifyingly amazing. How awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. So he's putting like God's foundation at this location, and he says, "This is the gate of heaven." And so it's literally the word gateway, portal is right there. When you talk about the experience that he had there. He had a traversing of realms experience. And quite often through my podcast and people's experiences, but also in the scripture, people have these traversing realms when they go into this alternate state of mind and existence. Again, bringing it back to what I said, we are way more spiritual of beings than what we often give ourselves credit for and what we tend to think in. And another one would be Daniel chapter 10, when he has this vision of a coming war, and he spends 21 days praying, and actually I think it's 24 days, praying and seeking answers. And on the 24th day, an angel appears before Daniel. And I don't think it says what angel it was, but a lot of people believe, I think, that it's Gabriel. Nevertheless, an angel of the Lord appeared before Daniel. And here's the crazy thing is he's having this vision of this angel of the Lord appearing before him. And there's other people around. I don't know exactly who was around. It probably says it somewhere in the text. But the thing that stands out in my head so much is that he's having this vision of the angel of the Lord appearing before him. The people around him, it says, they didn't see what he was seeing. They couldn't see what he was seeing, but they were terrified. So imagine being one of the other people. Like, say, Derek, you say you're the one having this vision. I'm hanging out with you. And all of a sudden you're having this vision, and I'm just getting freaked out. Like, I hear that all the time on my show. People are like, I didn't see it, I could feel it. And it's not always the bad entities that you're feeling. It's still a terrifying thing. I mean, when you're talking about like angels and what they look like, I mean, some of these angels are pretty funky looking when you read the descriptions in the Bible about it. But anyways, so they get terrified, and let's just say they run off. I don't know exactly how it was written, but they're no longer part of the picture. And he's one-on-one with this experience. He's having this vision, and at some point, I believe it was before the real communication between him and the angel happened, it said that he fell into a deep sleep. And it's the same thing with Jacob. He finds a rock. He lays his head on the rock. He goes to sleep, and that's when he has this experience. And there's this very real, tangible thing through the scriptures and other people's real life experiences of today. There are tons of people having experiences like this today that, in their sleep state, whether it's lucid dreaming or a dream sent by God, they're interacting with another realm. And so, with Jacob's ladder, it says that. And this is an interesting key too, where it's not only in Jacob's ladder, but it's also in other parts of the scripture, where it talks about angels coming and going from earth. Every time I see that, it always stands out to me that it says that the angels are ascending and descending. It's not saying that they're descending and ascending. It says that they're ascending and descending. It's like they're going to heaven to get the orders from God to bring it back, which tells us that the angels are here operating around us at all times. And so he, in this vision, has this vision where the staircase comes. He sees these stairs to heaven. He has this interaction with God, and then he comes back into this realm. And that's when he had said that this is the gate of heaven, because he literally was standing at the gate of heaven in another realm at that physical location. And so, portals are stargates are very real. The ancients knew it, and again, we over time have forgotten about it. But I think that's what people are tapping into when they're doing DMT, ayahuasca. They're using the mind as a portal to other realms. I call it the mind portal. I don't know what else to call it. I'm a retired truck driver. I don't have the greatest vocabulary. So, but it's literally a mind portal. And the more I look into it, the more I hear people's experiences, the more comfortable I'm saying that. I used to feel that when people would go down the story, or not the story, the dream route, with talking to me, in the early days of the show, I was not very interested in it. I was just like, oh, okay, you had a bad dream, let's move on. Like, everybody has bad dreams. But I didn't think of things that, again, the evolution of my show and me as a host, like, I didn't think of things the way I think of it now. I didn't even look at the scripture the way I look at it now. And it's something that should be so obvious, that all throughout the Old Testament, the idea of visions through dreams and dream interpretation is riddled throughout the Old Testament, and it should tell us that dreams are meant to be taken serious and understood. And then, it's just so when you start thinking, okay, so take it serious, understand the dreams. Why? Because as we see in these stories, you could say, oh, Jacob had a bad dream. No, that's not what the story is saying. The story is saying isn't saying Jacob had a dream where he thinks he saw God in his dream. No, it's saying that he was taken to God, the staircase to heaven, right there, but through the dream state. And it's a complicated thing. I'm actually one of these people who don't really remember my dreams a whole lot. My wife is the opposite. And I just had a lady on my show not too long ago, Vicky Joy Anderson. Fantastic lady. I mean, she is just so stinking awesome. But she said something to me on the show that I just never considered. I've been married for 17 years, man. And she said that, and that she, I don't think she's married, but when she was having these dreams, these attacks in her dream state, she was very aware of how real this was. This was not just, oh, an imagination thing. She actually prayed for somebody to intervene on her behalf with this stuff, and her earthly father appears in her dreams and actually prevents things from happening for her. And it's not like he is in his bed sleeping and dreaming, and he's like, "Oh yeah, I remember that last night. That was a close one, right? A good thing I got there in time to save you again." But in her mind, the image of her father comes and intervenes on her behalf a lot and stops these spiritual attacks. And she said that, and she was speaking to women in my audience, and it was probably for the best, because as a man, I can't say this because I'll be crucified, right? But she said that, speaking to women, that you have that they have a I don't want to say ability. What's the word I'm looking for? They have a they have something that we don't have, an allowance that we as men don't have, where women can call upon their husbands or their fathers to intervene on their behalf and fight for them spiritually. And it's something that I never really thought about with the dream state, because that's what she was talking about. And I said to her, so you're saying that my wife, when she has these terrible nightmares, instead of me just sitting there and listening to her about her bad dream and thinking there's nothing I can do about it, I can actually engage in the spiritual realm and fight on her behalf as her husband, as the leader of my household. And she's like, that's exactly what I'm saying. And I was like, well, that puts a whole new spin on things, and it's go time. So I've been doing that. I wouldn't say every night, but to be honest with you, there's nights that it definitely slips my mind. But when I'm thinking about it, I'll be laying there and I'll just be praying and asking God if there's anything that I can do to intervene on my wife's behalf or my children's behalf in their dream state to allow it to happen. My son is one that tends to have pretty bad dreams frequently. I know this because he wakes me up in the middle of the night. But it's something that I'm in the middle of pursuing right now, is that that this spiritual warfare, and it's all done through prayer, you know, like unless God literally implants me into one of my family members' dreams, which would be quite the story. I'll come back and tell you that story.
That'd make for a good episode.
I'm telling you, man. But I am definitely engaging in the spiritual realm on behalf of my family. And there are people who they've had experiences where they have interacted with people that they know in the dream state. We'll just call it the dream state. And both people recount the same story simultaneously. And the one I keep thinking about is this one guy that I had on the show years ago. He had a dream, and it wasn't, I don't remember the details of the dream. What I remember about the dream is that he was leaving the dream. The dream was coming to an end, and he was walking out of this like big room. And I think that he said there was other people around him walking in the same direction. And he had turned around and he saw his sister on the other side of the room entering into the room. And then he leaves the room and he exits the dream state. And the next day he's talking with his sister and she's like, I had a dream about you last night. I was walking into a room and you were actually walking out, and you turned around and looked back at me, and then you just kept on going. And he's like, I had that same dream, you know? And so there's definitely, we just think, oh, just go back to bed. It's a bad dream. That's what we tell our kids, you know? I think we should probably start trying to refrain from doing that. If we can just bring ourselves and maybe retrain our brains to understand that the dream state, the dream realm, is not just a figment of your imagination. It can be, like, I mean, if you're getting chased by Barney down a purple road, like, it's probably a bad dream. But there are real spiritual significance to night terrors, these lucid dreams that feel like they're more real than this reality. That's often how it's described to me. Again, I've never experienced it that I can remember. But when people are having those kind of dreams, I think it needs to be adhered to. And if your kids are describing this stuff to you, instead of just sending them back to bed or walking them back to the bedroom saying, oh, it's just a bad dream, don't worry about it, maybe just, you know, spend some time in prayer with them. I mean, I know it's 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, and we're all tired, but just to start having this idea in your head that, this actually might be a spiritual attack on my child, and I should probably take it pretty serious. And maybe not, but when has it ever hurt to pray, right? So like, you might be like, well, it's just, you know, it's probably just a bad dream, but maybe it's not. And it doesn't hurt to just, you know, ask for protection anyways. So that's kind of my stance on it. And I just went all over the place. You said to go all over the place. So hey, I did.
Fascinating dream state battles.
That's right. That's right.
No, that's fascinating stuff. And you've had some episodes recently, it seems like, where you were talking about whether it was stargates or portals and their possible connection to missing persons. I think I saw an episode about that.
Yeah, so I would say that the missing person stuff, I think, is a very interesting topic. And when I think there needs to be created, maybe I'm the one to do it, I don't know. There needs to be created some kind of missing person hunting division that goes in and looks for missing people, but through different lenses. I mean, a lot of times when the missing person cases pop up, the police come in, the firefighters come in, the search teams come in, we're looking, we can't find the person. And maybe it's because you're looking in the wrong realm. A lot of times people go missing up in the mountains here in East Tennessee, Smoky Mountains, but it happens a lot in wooded, mountainy areas. And, you know, even in the scripture, Mount Hermon, a lot of these mountain tops are places that are portal locations. You know, the fallen angels descended from the heavens to the mountaintop. And so if these are portal locations, is it something where people could possibly accidentally walk into portal openings? Is it that there is a constant opening of a portal in one location and they just accidentally stumble? I don't think that's the case. But there is something that I think is to be thought of when it comes to this, where as somebody who gives a lot of adherence to these things and understanding and just thought, is it possible that, you know, portals open and close in random locations where the veil is thinner? And is it possible that somebody slips into that dimension by accident? I was talking to a guy named Chad Riley, and he told me an experience that somebody had that was relayed to him, where this woman, I don't remember all the circumstances around it, but she saw like a square rectangular shaped portal light opening like off the road, and her husband was standing next to it saying, "Come here, hon, come here, let me show you, come here." And she's like, "What are you doing over there?" She's like, "This doesn't feel right." And she turns around and looks at her car, and there her husband is sitting in the car completely frozen in time. And obviously right there, she's like, okay, so you're not my husband. But the idea that her something was posing as her husband trying to coax her into this portal, is that something that happens on a more frequent basis that what we realize? Is there openings of portals where entities are coming through, which is something that I strongly believe in, and these entities, are they coaxing people in? Are they turning themselves into something that is familiar? You know, we see in the Bible, fallen angels and angels, but let's just go with angels in general. They can transform their appearance to be human looking. So who's to say that you know, there's a case here in the Smoky Mountains from 1969, I believe it is, a little boy named Dennis Martin went missing, and it was very peculiar, probably the most peculiar unsolved missing person case they have in the Smokies. And this little boy, it was like two families, they were camping together, and the kids were playing hide and seek, and the parents could see. It's like, you know how it is when you have kids where they're planning and they're doing something they think they're doing in secret, like, oh, we're going to scare mom and dad, but you're right there and you can hear them talking about it. It was kind of that situation, and the parents could see and observe the kids were going to hide and try to jump out and scare them as they were walking. So the father of Dennis Martin sees his little boy, Dennis, just off the trail, hop behind a bush, and he's crouched down there to scare the family as they approach. They approach, and he's not there. And it was within seconds. It wasn't even, I don't even think it was a minute of a walk to the bush. He was right there. And they immediately look around. They can't find him anywhere. A search party comes. They can't find, to this day, they can't find Dennis Martin. And it's like, well, what happened there? Did Dennis, like, he's just gone, disappears. There's no scent of him, nothing. What is that? I mean, is it possible that people like that could somehow traverse realms, and that's the case, that's the cause of some of these, not all, but some of these missing people cases? I don't know, but I mean, imagine if little Dennis Martin hops behind a bush and he's crouched down there, and behind him there's this mystical doorway, and his father, who's walking down the trail, appears next to the door and says, "Dennis, come here, let me show you where this goes." And so, "This is really cool, buddy." And all of a sudden he's gone. I just heard this yesterday, and I just want to say that David Pilates, who does the missing 411 stuff, he says that a lot of times people report when this bizarre stuff happens that everything gets quiet, like everything just dampens down, almost as if like the realm shift is beginning. And he says, he suggests that the best thing to do if you're with somebody is to sit down still on the ground, put your backs against each other so you see in opposite directions and just wait it out. And so I just wanted to say that. I don't know how well it will work, but if anybody listening right now has a situation like that happen in the woods and you're with somebody, just don't walk. Just sit still and wait. Just wait it out. So that's my PSA.
That might save a life. That reminds me of a story or a memory I have back when I was like 16. I remember I was hunting way out in the northeast corner of Washington State in this thick woods. This is before I knew any of this, right? And I'm just hunting, and it's a beautiful day. Breeze is blowing, birds chirping. You can hear the squirrels scurrying, all the noises of the forest. When suddenly, you know, in a matter of a minute, probably, that exact same thing happened. It became deadly silent in the forest to where, like, I noticed it and I was like, wait a second, what's changing? You know, something's going on. And then I just stopped and I realized it's dead silent here. This isn't normal. I remember being so freaked out that, is the big guy watching me? Like, and I ran back to the truck where the hunting party was. But let's talk about Skinwalker Ranch. It was cool. I went down with my friend Brent. Brent, if you're listening, you're awesome. He's a big fan of you, Tony, and the Confessionals as well. And so when you guys were in Washington State, where I live, you were kind of down south a couple hours. But we came down because you guys were filming for your documentary, a different one, but then you were also launching the kind of Skinwalker Ranch thing you did, right? So it was cool to sit there in the theater, watch your documentary, and then see you taking all the questions and answers. Man, some of those people are crazy. Some of the questions they ask, right?
Yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about your findings with Skinwalker Ranch and that whole area where you guys did that documentary. Because, again, when it comes to ancient history, it seems like Skinwalker Ranch details so much with the ancient petroglyphs surrounding that area and just the traditions of the Native Americans there. So let's talk about that for a little bit.
Yeah, so we went out to the area, and we actually stayed on a property called Space Wolf Research, which butts up against Skinwalker Ranch. And Ryan Burns invited us out, and he's an awesome dude. And so we go out there, and our whole thing was to try to get the Native perspective on things. You know, on the TV show, they beat the scientific side of things to death. I don't really watch it a whole lot. I saw that they were, the one episode I was watching, they were really kind of giving a lot of credence to the idea of portals. And I was like, nice, you know. But we wanted to see what the history was. And we were able to actually have two people that live on the reservation show us around. And the one guy, Johnny, showed us around for the week. And really kind of get their perspective. One of the things that they talk about is how right now in that area, there's a lot of oil drilling, and this whole area is like an ancient burial ground. It's where they buried their dead. And so there's a strong belief that when you disturb the ground, the paranormal activity will increase. And literally on the property we were staying on, we could have thrown a rock and hit an oil drill. It was right there. I mean, and so is the ground being disturbed in that area? Absolutely. Absolutely is. And is there a lot of activity happening? Yes. The people that lived across the street from the property we were staying on said that shortly before we arrived, I don't know, I think it was like a week or two before we arrived, they saw a black, I think they said it was an upright walking dog running through the property that we were staying on. And that property also had a former caretaker that left because I think it was three upright walking dogs stepped over the fence line onto the property, fired at them, and it did nothing to them. It didn't stop them one bit. And so that would be enough for me to leave too. So there's a lot of this paranormal stuff happening. Ryan has caught portals on his CCTV camera. He has a big metal, like 40-foot container on his property that was sitting next to the shed. And about a week before we arrived, he tells me that that container somehow lifted, turned 90 degrees, and was dropped on the ground. And sure enough, when we get out there, that container was absolutely moved. There was no sign of drag marks. It literally showed, it seems like it was lifted and then dropped. And there's only one entrance to that property. And that's at the driveway opening next to the caretaker's house, who's there 24/7. His job is to be there. And he never heard any tractor trailer coming on the property, heavy machinery going to move the trailer, or a container. It's not a trailer. It's one of those shipping containers that come off the ports. But you know, as the week was going on, we ran into a guy named James Keenan who came on the property. He had his own insights and theories as to why and how that container moved. He's been measuring the magnetic shifts in the ground, and he believes that it's very possible that some kind of magnetic pulse shot up through the ground and actually pushed that container up and shifted it and dropped it back down. And he actually was on the TV show and talking about this, and he's tracked this like magnetic anomaly that's in a straight line straight through the ranch. And the episode that he was on, they were exploring what this area that they call the triangle, and this magnetic anomaly goes right through it. And the way they showed it on the TV show, it looked like the line was going towards Space Wolf Research. And so I shot James a text and I said, hey man, you know, that line you were talking about, is that in anywhere close to the container that was moved? He said it actually goes right underneath it. And so there's a lot of weird things happening in that area. I do think that area is special. To say why it is, I'm not totally sure, but to say that it has interdimensional properties, I'm almost 100% sure of that. It seems like that area has its own consciousness, and it comes alive in this realm and shows you glimpses of another realm while you're there. We saw lights popping off in the sky for well over an hour. We documented that. It kicked off with a giant bright light shooting up from the ground across the valley on the mesa. That's the first thing we saw that night. Like all of a sudden, just this bright light shoots up into the sky, and we didn't have the night. I don't think we had the night vision cameras out at that point, and the camera that we had wasn't going to be able to capture this light properly. But we had a Sony A7, which is really good in low light. And we were able to snap photos of this bright light shooting up in the sky. I mean, this was a very wide, large, white light shooting up into the sky from the ground. We don't know what the source of the light was, but one thing is I've seen that light before on the Skinwalker Ranch TV show. They actually have experienced that same phenomenon. And I don't know if it was the same day that we were there or if it happens more than once, but there's a lot of strange phenomena happening there. A lot of interdimensional stuff, creatures coming in and out of portals, appearing and disappearing, skinwalkers, which in themselves, I believe skinwalkers are very interdimensional. And so it's a very fascinating area. And you mentioned about where you had your experience in Washington. We're coming out with, I don't know when this is airing, but we're premiering our new documentary, Sasquatch and the Missing Man. It's all based in Washington State, man. Like, we had some pretty bonker experiences out there. So when you say that the woods went quiet and it got real chilling, I don't doubt it at all. I had never been to Washington before we did that documentary shoot. And I'm used to East Coast woods, even the Smoky Mountains. The woods where I'm at are much different than the woods in Pennsylvania. These woods, they've been logged and stuff, but they haven't been as heavily logged as the ones in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania was clear cut. The entire state just, everything was taken down. So all the woods that we have there are relatively new. But out where you're at, brother, that's like a whole other world. Like, I mean, I couldn't believe, I just felt like I was in a different world. It was like, talk about realm shifting. Like, it's like you walk yeah. into another realm. It's wild.
Yeah. Out here is the deep, dark woods, right?
Yeah.
And if you're with old growth trees, and it's amazing how big some of these get. And then you add, you know, the huge mountains around them and surrounding them. Hey, let's close with talking about CERN, because this too You've done a lot of content surrounding CERN. And so for people who might not be aware, just give us a simple, quick explanation of what they say CERN is and then what you think CERN really is.
I can tell you what CERN is. That's not what they're telling us it is. So, I mean, all right. So they started building CERN, I think, back in the 1950s. It's a very old facility. I think it's people think that it's something new. It's not. It's
Oh,
nothing new.
I didn't even know that. That's crazy. The 50s?
Yeah, it was back in the 50s. I think actually back in the 50s is when it started up, when they started operating. But CERN is a particle accelerator that's underground, 17 miles in diameter. It stretches underneath the borders of Switzerland and France. It's an international endeavor, and some of the world's top scientists work at this location, and they had been on a quest to find they were looking for the God particle, and they say they found it. And their whole thing is, we're looking for the very fabric of existence. We want to reverse engineer existence. And so they're smashing particles together to get to the very root of this. And in that process, okay, so that's what they say basically. Okay, that's the dumbed down version. And if anybody that at CERN ever hears this, they're like, no, wrong, you're using it wrong, you're saying it wrong. Listen, it is what it is. But here's what I suspect it happening. There's a lot of rumors that they have opened portals at CERN, and that they are interacting with another realm at CERN, with beings coming through. And when you look at CERN, you're like, well, you know, that sounds sci-fi. They're scientists. They're based in science, not this weird alternate reality portals, magical stuff. Then why do they have a statue of Shiva on their front lawn? They literally have a statue of the ancient god Shiva, the god of destruction, I believe it is, on the front lawn. They have been documented on video doing some kind of satanic ritual outside in one of the courtyards. And they didn't deny that they did that. They said it was a joke. They said that it was a prank, that they were goofing around. They didn't say that's not real. They didn't say that's somebody else, that it's a fake. No, they're like, oh no, we were just kidding. Okay, so you're saying you did it. And it's like, I don't know about you, Derek, but the last time I went to work and did a satanic ritual just joking around, I don't think that's ever crossed the table as an
Right.
option to do for the day. So there's real things like that are going on. And you get these over the, especially this pop more popular probably about closer to 10 years ago. There was people back when the internet was still the wild, wild west and you could actually do things on it. There was people that actually were leaking supposed emails out of CERN talking about these things, leaked documents kind of thing. But CERN isn't the only place that has a particle accelerator. It's the most well known. I think China is trying to right now build a particle accelerator that's bigger than CERN, which should be concerning to everybody. And in the United States, we have several of them. There's, I think, one or two in Texas. There's one in Chicago. There's one here in East Tennessee, in Oak Ridge. People are familiar with Oak Ridge for where they developed the nuclear bomb. That's not all they do there, though. They have a particle accelerator there, and they are doing very similar things. In 2019, the scientists at Oak Ridge came out and said that they were trying to discover the mirror universe. And when people like me started commenting on it and kind of being like, I don't know if this is a good idea, they came out and said, oh, we were just joking. So now we have the scientists at CERN who are doing satanic rituals saying they're just joking. We have the scientists at Oak Ridge trying to discover a mirror universe saying they're just joking. And the last time I checked, scientists generally aren't that funny. And so I'm thinking to myself, like, I don't know. I think you guys are bad at jokes and you're bad at lying. And so there was that rumor. So that was back when I was in Pennsylvania, when I lived there in the Philadelphia area. 2 years ago, I moved down here, and I moved in April of 2022, and in July, I was invited to a 4th of July party down the road from us. It was a neighborhood party. So, you know, me and my wife and the kids go. It's a good opportunity to meet the neighbors and things like that. And I don't know anybody. My son is there, and he's playing in this kid's play area with one other kid, And there's a guy standing there watching the kids. And so, I assume it's the father of the other kid, but, as dad, I should go over there and make sure that he's not some weirdo. And I go over and I strike up a conversation with him. And, assumptions were right. It was his kid and he's a nice guy. I start talking to him. And I said, oh, what do you do? And, keep in mind, nobody knows who I am. Nobody knows I have a paranormal podcast that I talk about this stuff. I asked him what he does for a living. He says he works in security at CERN. Or not at CERN, at Oak Ridge. And I asked him, okay, so what is that like over there? And he talks about, the high level security stuff. He's former military. He's actually one of our most decorated snipers. He has quite the resume. Very, well, I'll just say he's a very deadly individual if he chooses to be. So, if you want somebody guarding something highly secured, he's one of your guys. So he starts talking about the stuff, and he tells me that he's securing, this, that, and the other. And he goes, and portals and things that come, he goes, and things that come out of portals.
Oh
And
boy.
I was like, this guy doesn't know who I am,
He
And I was
doesn't
like,
have any idea who he's talking
yeah.
to.
And I was just like, he's drunk. And I, because he was drinking a lot. And I was like, this guy, I'm not going to take this. I'm just going to let this one go. And so I did. I let it go. I got to know his wife at the party and stuff. And it turns out, actually, there's another guy in my neighborhood that works at CERN, and he's a scientist there that ju they just hired. And
Or
from what I,
Oak Ridge, you mean?
yeah, I keep saying CERN. I'm sorry, Oak Ridge. And it turns out, from what I understand, at the time at least, he didn't really know what he was being hired for. They just kind of like, it seems like they were hiring him to put his brain on retainer. It's just like, when we need your brain, we're going to call you. And so I think he was like some kind of like rocket scientist or something. I don't know. But I never really got a chance to talk to him much. But a few months later, I was invited to a birthday party. I think it was in October. It was a neighborhood couple. And so we go, and that family still is there again. And he starts going downstairs to get some food. And in front of him, his wife, my wife, I said, hey, man. And it's like from across the room, right? And I said, hey, man, last time we met at the party, you were talking about what you do and the portal stuff. And I said, you were just kidding, right? And he goes, oh, no, I was serious. That's very real. And I looked at his wife and she's like, yep, that's real. And I was like, holy crap. And then to top this off, East Tennessee is very heavy in the gun culture. Even Smith and Wesson just moved to the town I'm in right now to their operations. So all their guns are going to be printed Maryville, Tennessee on it. So I kind of get ingrained in the gun culture here and meet a lot of people that have gun ranges and fun things like that. And I met this one guy that owns a local gun range. And him and I had dinner together. And he's another person that works in security at Oak Ridge. And him and I are talking, having a good conversation over dinner. We don't really strike up the conversation as the details of what he's doing. We walk outside, we're about to say our farewells, and I just bring up his job, and he starts talking, and he drops the portal idea as well. And both guys told me that apparently a year or two before they were hired, that there was, which would take you around the time of 2019, they were successful in interacting with another realm, another dimension, by through, I guess, what we could call a portal. And the sound that came through the portal was so terrifying that it left everybody in the room running for their life. And that's the story I have. And so, is science dabbling in other realms? Yes. I think it's Edward Bernays had said years ago that that is the case when the TV show Stranger Things became real popular. He said that they're dabbling in parallel realms and universes. The stories that I have back that up. And people still will say, oh, that's BS. Well, maybe, but maybe not. And if it's not, it And you start putting, taking it back to full circle at the beginning of the conversation. If you start putting the lenses of the supernatural realm on your eyes and you start viewing the world through supernatural lenses, and then you start hearing these stories, all of a sudden things start making a lot more sense, a lot more sense. And that's kind of where I'm at in life. I don't expect everybody to jump on the train with me, but that's the direction of my train. And, I'm having a blast. So if anybody wants to have fun, come on the ride with me. It's great.
Oh man, that's fascinating about the Oak Ridge facility. I had no idea it was even there. So that was fascinating to hear about, especially that you've got direct testimony from guys that work there, multiple witnesses that are saying the same thing. That is fascinating. Well, Tony, this has been a great time with you. Again, everybody watching, listening, follow the Confessionals podcast. On Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts, follow them on Instagram. Is there any other way you want people to connect with you, follow you, even personally? I know you got personal social media.
Yeah, I have the show social media. I have my personal. I mainly hang out on Instagram on my personal one. Tony Merkel Official is the handle. I got the blue check mark, I paid for it. So people can check me out there. I would say also check out merkelfilms.com. That's where we put our documentaries. And we are coming out with our third documentary, Sasquatch and the Missing Man, which will have a live premiere, a virtual live premiere on May 5th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. People that maybe want to check out that documentary and be part of the live premiere can go to moment.co/Sasquatch. So it's just that website, moment.co/Sasquatch. You can purchase your tickets there, and that is where you will watch it as well. When you're buying the tickets, you'll create an account, and then when it's time for the live premiere, you just log into your account and you'll have access to the premiere live. There'll be a live chat in there, and then people can also, when they're registering for their tickets, I think it's like an extra $5, and you get access to the after party, which is gonna be a live Q&A with me and Wes Germer from Sasquatch Chronicles. So we went out to Washington State to Wes's Bigfoot encounter location, and we documented that story, the journey there, and some other people who have had very bizarre Bigfoot interactions in the state of Washington. And it is by far the best documentary we've come out with. So I'm really excited about it.
So everybody go to that website, be a part of the premiere, and I cannot wait to see this, being that it's in my home state. So it's probably going to give me some new locations to go explore. So Tony, thanks again for your time, man, and hopefully we'll do this again in the future.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.